This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Each of the five major presidential candidates slept in their own beds last night after their home states gave each of them a victory on Super Tuesday. But there is no rest today. Senators Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John McCain returned to Washington to vote on the economic stimulus package. Former Governors Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee headed back out to the campaign trail. There's another set of primaries Saturday. Both parties hold primaries in Louisiana and Washington State, Democrats in Nebraska, Republicans in Kansas. Then comes the so-called Potomac primary next Tuesday, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. In this hour, we'll look ahead to those contests and to the contests in both parties. Senator McCain is now the clear front runner for the Republican presidential nomination, while Senators Clinton and Obama may be fighting over delegates up to the Democratic National Convention in Denver. We'll talk with advocates and representatives from all five campaigns, and we want to hear from those of you who have yet to vote and remain undecided. What are you struggling with? We have two phone lines for you today, one for Republicans and one for Democrats. If you're an independent, you can reach us on either line. The Republican line, 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893 for Republicans and independents. Democrats and independents, 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864. And everybody can send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. And we begin with NPR political editor Ken Rudin, who's with us here in Studio 3A. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And because of the way the Republican Party rules work with winner-take-all in the most important delegate department, McCain has moved way out in front of Romney and Huckabee in terms of how many delegates he has. But is it a slam dunk?
Well, he does have twice as many delegates as anybody else. The way the Republicans like to do their rules, they like to have a nice and tidy and
quick.
Go to the nomination. They like their front runners and they like them early. But I think Mike Huckabee did far better in certainly in the South than anybody expected. A lot of people thought that Huckabee and Romney would split the conservative vote and enable McCain to win in many of those contests. It was Mike Huckabee's strength that kept him in the race. So yes, John McCain is the front runner. Yes, he's the likely Republican nominee. But one, he still hasn't put away Romney or Huckabee. And two, he still has problems with the conservative wing of the Republican Party, which is the majority wing of the party.
And this morning in a post-Super Tuesday news conference, John McCain spoke about the problems that he has and his efforts to unify the Republican Party.
We all share common principles, common conservative principles, and we should coalesce around those issues in which we are in agreement, and I hope respectfully disagree on the few specifics that there is disagreement on.
And those specific areas of disagreement, what are the big issues that John McCain is having difficulty with conservatives?
Right. There are several of them, and they really go back, a lot of them go back to 2000 when he ran against George W. Bush for the nomination in the first place. One of them, of course, is illegal immigration and the overhaul of the immigration system. What John McCain has been proposing, which is similar to what President Bush has been proposing, has been dismissed by many conservatives as amnesty, allowing the 12 to 14 million illegal immigrants to either apply for citizenship or have a path to citizenship that many conservatives feel is amnesty. John McCain voted against two of President Bush's tax cuts. Mitt Romney has mentioned this over and over on the campaign trail, that for all of McCain's insisting that he was part of the Reagan Revolution, he was not part of the Bush Revolution. And Mitt Romney is trying to make the case to fellow conservatives that he, not John McCain, is the true conservative. And of course, this goes back to McCain-Feingold, John McCain's attempt to overhaul the way campaigns are financed. Many conservative groups feel that that's really stifling free speech, that it's against the Constitution, and that is bad for conservatives. And then, of course, we always, you know, they always point out they feel is intemperate remarks that John McCain made during the 2000 primaries. He called Pat Robertson and the late Jerry Falwell as agents of intolerance. He has, of course, warmed up to these, you know, the religious conservatives in his 2008 bid. But a lot of conservatives to this day don't trust him. I suspect that many, like perhaps Rush Limbaugh, would probably rather have Hillary Clinton in the White House only because I think his listenership would go up because, you know, so he can rail against, you know, the Hillary Clinton. But there are a lot of conservatives who are very, very nervous about the prospect of John McCain as the nominee or as the president.
And several conservatives on talk radio, as you mentioned, Rush Limbaugh. Well, Rush Limbaugh talking this morning about the prospect of John McCain being so far ahead in the delegate count on the Republican side.
McCain, for all intents and purposes, is the nominee. I mean, it's not over and anything could happen, but for all intents and purposes, McCain is the nominee. And the fact that he did not win the South is important. The reason is simple. He's not strong in the South, and Republicans cannot win. The White House cannot win a presidential race without winning in the South. And McCain demonstrated he can't do that last night unless he puts the huckster on the ticket as the Veep.
And the reference to the huckster, Rush Limbaugh clearly meaning Republican former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. And he's right. The Republican South, that's vital to any Republican presidential candidacy.
True. That is the most reliable. If you think of the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections, very, very close. Al Gore, John Kerry ran very, very close. Neither Gore nor Kerry won a single southern state. They all went Republicans. As far as John McCain's appeal in the South, remember, let's not forget that he did win South Carolina. He did win Florida. But Rush Limbaugh is right in the sense that he was shut out yesterday in the South.
Let's see if we can get some callers on the line. Again, Republicans and independents can reach us at 800-344-3893. Democrats and independents at 800-344-3864. Everybody can email us, talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Jonathan, and he's with us from Laguna Miguel in California.
Yes, that's right. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about the unpledged delegates in the Republican convention. I hear a lot, you know, about that John McCain is the presumptive winner, but I don't see that. There's talk about, winner-take-all states, but there are only two states and the District of Columbia left as winner-take-all, a total of 99 delegates out of 1,008. So if nobody drops out, if both Huckabee and Romney stay in, why does John McCain get the 1,191 delegates he needs by the convention? And if he doesn't, what happens when 20% of the delegates are unpledged?
Ken Rudin?
Well, I suspect that if Jonathan's scenario is correct and that Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee both stay in, then theoretically they could split the conservative, the social conservative vote, and John McCain will continue to win primaries. Because even if it's true, he has won a bunch of winner-take-all primaries in Missouri and New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, things like that. But he also won California, which is not winner-take-all, and he won the plurality of the delegates there, too. So it may be a war of attrition. It may not happen overnight. It may not happen this month. But again, if the social conservative vote remains split between Romney and Huckabee, it could only be to McCain's advantage.
And Jonathan, as difficult as the arithmetic might look for John McCain, it looks even more difficult for either Mitt Romney or Mike Huckabee, since together they're not close to John McCain. Anyway, thanks for the call. Here's an email from Ken in Cleveland. I was pretty confident my final vote this year would be for a Democrat, but when I heard Ann Coulter say she'd rather vote for the devil instead of McCain, I began to do some research. After doing some reading, I see now that McCain could possibly be one of the best candidates to get Iraq under control and finally get our troops home. If it comes down to him and Obama, I don't know which way I'll go. Change, legitimate military experience, I have never been more confounded. And I guess that's the other side of Senator McCain's appeal.
You know, you talk about the history in the making if either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama is nominated or elected, and that's absolutely true. But actually, John McCain's nomination would be pretty historic as well because he's really not what the Republican Party has stood for. I mean, it's been reliably conservative, and of course John McCain is very conservative, but not on many hot-button issues that some of the conservative right are not happy about. So McCain would be also revolutionary as well, and it'll be very interesting to see what the party, what the makeup, what Democrats think about John McCain in November, and what Republicans think about him.
But that's a long way down the road. We've got some contests coming up on Saturday, as we mentioned, and next Tuesday. The big contests, I guess, are what, Louisiana, Washington, and then next week in Virginia, Maryland, and the District of Columbia.
Right. On the Democratic side, I suspect the next couple of days, Louisiana on Saturday, also Nebraska Democratic caucuses, Washington caucuses. On Sunday, there are Maine Democratic caucuses. Last week, Mitt Romney won on the Republican side. And then on February 12th, the Potomac primary, the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. I suspect those will be, most of them will be very good, fertile territory for Barack Obama, and he could, have a very good couple of days. Hillary Clinton's campaign is clearly waiting for March 4th, which is like a lifetime from now, because it's hard to believe that Iowa was only a month ago, and so Texas and Ohio, two very good Hillary Clinton states. But, you know, we've seen in the past that a month out, the polls are so unreliable that the more the Obama and Hillary campaign, they campaign, things can change, and they probably will.
One thing that happened in January was that Barack Obama was making about $1 million a day, more than that, greatly out-earning Hillary Clinton. Money is going to start being a factor for all of these campaigns.
Right, and some people wonder or worry at the same time if the Democratic Party will return to its nasty back and forth that we saw during South Carolina. The subsequent debate that the two candidates had was certainly more civil. The objections between the two candidates were more on policy issues than personal issues. But if it is very close, if Hillary Clinton is thought to, I can't imagine her running out of money because except for Barack Obama, she's the best finance candidate challenger in history. It's going to be interesting to see if it gets ugly and nasty as money starts to run out.
Stay with us, Ken Rudin. And coming up, representatives from the various campaigns will tell us how they plan to move into the next phase in this campaign after 24 states, American Samoa, let's not forget Democrats abroad, all had their presidential nominating contest yesterday. First up, Tom Daschle, campaign co-chair for Barack Obama. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, Republicans and Independents, 800-344-3893. Democrats and Independents, 800-344-3864. You can all email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to an NPR News special. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about what's next in this very exciting political season. For the rest of the hour, we plan to hear from representatives of various campaigns about their next steps. And, of course, NPR's political editor Ken Rudin is still with us. We're taking your calls, too. If you're from one of the upcoming primary states, what's a candidate have to do to get your vote if you're undecided? We have two phone lines for you today, Republicans and Democrats. If you're an independent, you can call on either line. Republicans and Independents, 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893 for Republicans and Independents. Democrats and Independents, 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864 for Democrats and Independents. And everybody can send us email. That address is talk@npr.org. Joining us now on the phone from Dallas, Texas, is Tom Daschle, the former senator from South Dakota, former minority and majority leader of the United States Senate. He's now co-chair for Senator Barack Obama's campaign. Good to speak with you, Senator Daschle.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be back.
And as you look ahead to the next step in the campaign, your candidate said today, well, he was a decided underdog a couple of weeks ago, and now he's just a slight underdog.
Well, that's the way we look at it. I think we have to feel as an underdog all the way through, given the network that the Clinton Organization has established over many, many years. And obviously, we're closing that gap, and we feel very good about the results last night. But now there are new contests and new states, and we're jumping into it as we speak.
There were any number of signal victories for Barack Obama yesterday, including a very narrow victory, it appears, in Missouri and a number of other ones. But there were some stinging defeats yesterday as well. Were you disappointed in Massachusetts, where Senator Obama had gotten the endorsements of Senators Kerry and Kennedy and the governor there, Deval Patrick?
Well, obviously, there are always disappointments on nights as big as this, but there were so many more pleasant surprises as well. The fact that we won 13 and the Clinton campaign only won 8, the fact that we may have picked up a net number of delegates beyond Hillary's, the overall vote count. I mean, it looks like we've got a slight lead in New Mexico. That one's still left to be counted. So we had just a great night last night, exceeding our expectations dramatically. We didn't think we'd come anywhere close to that, given where we were just a couple of weeks before. So it feels very good, and we think we've got the kind of momentum it's going to take now to go into the next round.
And where do you see the next critical states? What are going to be good states for Senator Obama?
Well, we're not making any predictions for the reason Barack just mentioned, Neil, but we feel very good about the Mid-Atlantic. We think that Washington State looks good. Wisconsin's certainly winnable. There isn't anything out there right now that we think we're going to concede. We're going to fight every step of the way in each one of these states, and we have every expectation that we'll come out at least as well as we did last night.
Let me ask you a question about superdelegates. These are Democratic Party officials, elected officials, others who make up a pretty sizable percentage of the Democratic National Convention. Some of those are come out and said that they would back Senator Clinton. Some have come out and said that they would support Senator Obama. Is there going to? But they're not required. They're not pledged to anybody. They can switch votes back and forth. Do you see this going back and forth up until the convention?
They do. It's just amazing how pivotal I think those 700 plus, almost 800 superdelegates are going to be, and they are going to get a lot of attention. And obviously, as we go forward, because of the swing nature, because of the uncommitted nature of the superdelegate, I think that it's not enough just to get them to commit. You've got to keep them committed. And so we're going to have our hands full doing that. But we feel very good. We've been picking up superdelegates by increasing numbers in the last week or 10 days, and I think that's going to continue as well.
Senator Daschle, one of the things that interested me most about yesterday's results, there were 13 red states that voted. 9 of them went for Barack Obama. And you think of the red states Democrats like Kathleen Sebelius in Kansas and Janet Napolitano in Arizona and Senator Ben Nelson in Nebraska. These are states where we're desperately looking to have a viable Democratic nominee, and they all support Barack Obama.
Well, Ken, there's no doubt and it's no coincidence that red state Democrats are really hoping Barack Obama is going to be our nominee. Why? Because they think he's electable in red states. We've made great progress in the West. We now have a majority of the governors in the West, and we're picking up Senate and House seats in numbers we never thought possible before. That has to continue, and the only way it's going to continue is to build on the 50-state strategy that you've heard a lot about, but also that we have a nominee who feels comfortable going into the South Dakotas and the Kansases and the Colorados and other states west of the Mississippi. That's happening, and we are very excited about that.
Let's get a caller on the line with Senator Daschle. This is Steve. Steve calling us from Bedford in Texas on the Democratic line.
Thank you for taking my call. I have no problem with either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama as president. My concern, however, is that Hillary Clinton would become a single issue in and of herself, unifying Republicans, even jaded and disillusioned Republicans, to turn out. What are Hillary Clinton's chances of beating a John McCain? I know that she could beat Mitt Romney, and I would really like Mitt Romney to be the Republican nominee, but I'm a little bit concerned about her ability to compete against John McCain.
Senator Daschle, this was something that Senator Obama alluded to in his speech last night.
Well, I don't think there's any question. Those of us who support Barack as strongly as we do so in part because of his electability. He is electable. We already know he can draw Republicans and independents and Democrats. I don't think Hillary has that capacity. She might surprise us all, but I don't think she does, in part because of the history. There's a long, long history of a lot of brutal fights with the Republicans over the years. That history isn't forgotten, and you bring that political baggage with you when you go into another race. Barack doesn't have that. Because he's a fresh face and a clean slate, he's able to say things and do things and reach out that overcomes all of that history of the past, and that's one of his greatest strengths.
Steve, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Senator Daschle, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Tom Daschle, a former senator from South Dakota, former majority and minority leader of the United States Senate. And listening to that on the phone was Ann Lewis, a senior advisor to Senator Hillary Clinton. She joins us now. And Ann Lewis, nice to speak with you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
And the electability issue you just heard Senator Daschle talk about.
Yes, and it's a subject I'm happy to talk about because you will not be surprised to hear, think that Hillary Clinton is, in fact, the strongest general election candidate that Democrats could nominate. Let me start with her own personal history. Unlike Senator Obama, she has actually waged and won campaigns against fierce, well-funded Republican opposition. When Hillary ran for the Senate in 2000, more than $60 million was spent against her. She was outspent. She started with a gentleman named Rudy Giuliani, who was a stronger candidate in New York than he subsequently has turned out to be. But people thought he was really strong. He was succeeded by a suburban congressman who seemed made to order for the state. She beat them both. In contrast, Senator Obama has had the good luck never to face a strong, well-funded Republican opponent. In his one statewide race for the United States Senate, his Republican opponent self-destructed, and he wound up running against a gentleman named Alan Keyes, whom many of us think of fondly for his variety of extreme statements, but not a serious general election candidate. So again, Hillary has actually run twice in a large state, New York, with a large and diverse population, including a big rural and upstate population, and has won twice, at least the first time, against very well-funded opposition, and then doing so well that her opponent the second time around had a harder time getting the same level of support.
To be fair to Mayor Giuliani, he withdrew from the race after being diagnosed
with
prostate cancer.
Yes, he withdrew.
She didn't beat him.
We felt very good about where we were at the time. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
But between them, $60 million was raised and spent against her. And again, she won. Now, there are 40, we would say, red counties in New York, 40 counties that went for George Bush in 2004. In 2006, Hillary Clinton won 36 of them. So again, look at her own general election results. Second, look at her ability to expand the electorate. And I would especially point to women, those 20 million single women who did not vote in November 2004, 5 million registered didn't vote, 15 million aren't registered. We know that the excitement around Hillary's candidacy can, we believe, turn them out. They have already told us they are as interested in this campaign as their married sisters. That's something of a first for politics. And secondly, in the Hispanic community, and Hispanic voters have rightly been referred to as a kind of sleeping giant until lately of American politics, again, Hillary's strong support. So I think her ability to extend and expand the electorate is going to be, again, a very strong one in a general election. And finally, when it comes down to the issue of security, and I regretfully believe that the Republicans in 2008 will once again try to scare us because they haven't got anything positive to say. Hillary Clinton is the only candidate on either side who is both committed to ending the war in Iraq and has a real track record of supporting the troops, getting them better equipment, better health care, better treatment while they're in Iraq and Afghanistan, and here at home with her Heroes at Home legislation, which has been passed. So I think she's going to be able to take on that security argument. That's why she's got respected retired military officials like General Wes Clark supporting her and make a very strong argument. So that's why I think she will be the strongest in a general election.
Let's see if we can get a caller in. This is Daniel. Daniel with us from Odessa, Texas on the Democratic line. Daniel, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. I have like two questions. One, if neither one of either Obama enough candidates.
Daniel, I'm sorry. Your call is inaudible, and we're just going to have to let you go. I apologize. I know you waited online to speak with us, but we can't hear you. I'm sorry about that. Ann Lewis, let me ask you one question that seems to be overhanging the race at the moment. If we're down to a delegate count in Denver, what's going to happen with the delegates from Florida and Michigan?
Well, that's a very good question because, and again, this would get back to an electability issue. We should not forget, Democrats, as we look towards the fall, 1,700,000 Democrats came out to vote in Florida. Now, interestingly, no candidate campaigned in Florida. We honored the pledge. No candidate, well, almost no candidate advertised in Florida. Senator Obama did actually run national television ads. But with all that said, Democrats came out at a record pace. So I do think maybe trying to tell us something, but I don't want to get into that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton got more votes in Florida last Tuesday than on the Democratic side, than John McCain got on the Republican side. So while they were running in separate contests, I think it speaks to the level of excitement and enthusiasm that she got out. Second, the convention, as you know, in the Democratic Party rules, ultimately the convention decides its own membership. I don't think that Democrats will want to begin a general election campaign where both Florida and Michigan will be very high on our targets. We will not want to begin that kind of campaign by kicking out delegations from Florida and Michigan. I think we will find a way to seat them and to welcome them because those states are going to be important in November.
Ann Lewis, thanks for your time.
All right. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Ann Lewis is senior advisor to Senator Hillary Clinton. She spoke to us on the phone from here in Washington, D.C. And you're listening to an NPR News special. Joining us now is Republican Representative Tom Davis. He represents Virginia's 11th Congressional District and supports Senator John McCain. And it's nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Senator McCain scored some important victories last night, not able to actually secure the nomination, though he's clearly the front runner at this point. He's still got his work cut out for him among the primaries coming up very soon. Next Tuesday is in Virginia, your state.
That's right. Well, he didn't get the knockout blow, but he moved further and further ahead at this point. He's got divided opposition. And, you know, there's a lot of daylight between him and the end zone at this point. I think he's broken out of the pack, and it's just a matter of time as more states elect delegates before he gets the majority status.
And do you expect him to do well in Virginia?
I expect him to, particularly in my part of the state, in Northern Virginia, in the Washington suburbs, and in the Tidewater area, which is a heavy military. Northern Virginia is now 30% of the statewide vote, and we expect them to do well. But, you know, that's why you have elections. We'll see. But I think this here and Maryland will both be McCain, and D.C. will be McCain country.
At the same time, Senator McCain talking earlier today about, well, I guess everybody recognizes his need to mend fences with the conservative wing of the party.
Well, he does. But look, at the end of the day, Republicans are not going to win with just Republican votes. You've got to be outside the box and attract independents, and that's where Senator McCain's great strength is. This is an individual of tremendous integrity who goes to Michigan and tells people that their jobs aren't coming back. They're going to have to reinvent new jobs, which is factual, but you've got every other candidate just pandering out there, claiming they've got some program to bring the jobs back, which just isn't so. He goes to Iowa and talks about corn ethanol not being an efficient use, where everybody else is pandering on this issue. He understands that we face a lot of tough decisions in this country. He's willing to take them head on, and he's willing to say the unpopular thing, and I think that's the kind of leadership the country needs, and I think a lot of independents grasp that, which is why they're not a part of either party in the rhetoric that goes back and forth. They're looking for leadership, and it's the one thing he's demonstrated through his 20-plus years in the Senate.
Ken?
Congressman, let me just ask you a quick question about Virginia. Virginia's elected two successive Democratic governors. George Allen was defeated last year, and it looks like Mark Warner may win John Warner's seat this year. What has happened to the Old Dominion?
Well, I don't know that anything, but like everything else, it's a competitive state. It will, I think, probably be Republican at the presidential level this year, particularly if it's a McCain, if he's the nominee. There are some demographic changes in the state as you get a very creative class of people moving into the urban areas of the state that I think moderated a little bit. But look, for eight straight elections, the state has elected a governor that is the opposite party of the president. Eight straight elections. Virginia usually uses its gubernatorial race to send a message to Washington. And I think they did that with Bush in the White House, and before that with Clinton in the White House, we sent two Republican governors there. So on the state level, Republicans still control the state House. The Democrats have a narrow lead in the state Senate. It's a competitive state, but I think nationally it's still Republican. George Allen's loss, I think, is twofold. Number one, it was a huge national Democratic year. Just a year that was off the charts in terms of a Democratic wave. and that carried into Virginia. And also his unfortunate statements about Makaka and so on put the race in a competitive mode. Had he not made any serious mistakes, I think he would have been reelected with a lesser margin than normal, but still with a comfortable margin.
And finally, we just have a very few seconds left, but does it concern you? You talked about the excitement in both parties. Yesterday in the states where both parties had primaries, about 15 million Democrats voted, about 9 million Republicans.
Well, I think it's a concern for the Republicans right now. I think the country's undergoing, to some extent, a Bush fatigue, and people are looking for change. Democrats haven't offered change. They're talking a lot about it, but if you listen to what they're offering, it's nothing out of that isn't different from what they were offering back in the 90s and was rejected then. But the thing that's exciting about John McCain is he is different. He is outside the Republican box. People know he is not going to be Bush 3. He offers some level of independence and leadership skills.
Congressman Davis, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Tom Davis, congressman from Virginia, endorsing, as you heard, John McCain. More when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. This is an NPR News special. This is an NPR News special. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And here are headlines from some of the stories we're following here today at NPR News. The Pentagon is increasingly worried about the situation in Afghanistan with increased attacks by the Taliban. Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says he is concerned about the insurgency. And the violence that erupted in Kenya after its presidential election in December is having a spillover effect here in the U.S. Many colleges are canceling their Kenya study abroad programs this spring because of concerns over safety. Details on those stories and, of course, much more coming up later today on All Things Considered. We're talking about what's next in politics this hour. This weekend, Kansas, Louisiana, Washington State, Nebraska, and Maine have their say. Then the Potomac primaries are on Tuesday. We want to hear from you. If you're an undecided voter, what issues, what personalities are you struggling with? Give us a call. We have two lines today, one for Republicans, one for Democrats. If you're an independent, you can call on either line. Republicans and independents, 800-344-3893. Again, 800-344-3893 for Republicans and independents. Democrats and independents, 800-344-3864. Again, 800-344-3864. All of you can email us. That address is talk@npr.org. Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, is still with us. Joining us now from Little Rock, Arkansas, is Chip Saltzman, campaign manager for Governor Mike Huckabee. Thanks very much for being with us, and congratulations on your victories last night.
Thank you very much. Happy to be with you today.
And there was a real burst of victories, not just in Governor Huckabee's home state of Arkansas, but Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, West Virginia. Yet you look at the rest of the campaign calendar, where does Governor Huckabee go from here?
Well, I think this weekend we've got places like Kansas and Washington State and Louisiana where we think we can do well. And we will be going to some of those states this week before the vote happens on Saturday. We've also got next week Virginia and Maryland, which we think we can compete and do well. And then beyond that, there's some big states that are still out there sitting there like Texas and Ohio that have still yet to vote, and we think we can again do very well in states like that. So there's still a lot of contests left to go. We obviously had a good night last night, so did Senator McCain. And there's still lots of contest in front of us for us to do well. So we're looking forward to the rest of this race.
Yet on the delegate count, Senator McCain already more than halfway home. The arithmetic gets daunting.
Well, it is. The arithmetic obviously changed from last night. He picked up several delegates, and there's still a lot of delegates to be had out there. And he's still got to get, last my count, he's still got to get about 60% of all the delegates out there to get the nomination. And what we've said, we're going to stay in this fight till somebody gets to 1191, and nobody's there yet.
1191, of course, the magic number, the majority of delegates to ensure the nomination. We have a caller on the line. Can you take a call with us?
Absolutely.
This is Spencer calling us from North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, on the Republican line.
Thanks for taking my call. I don't know which of the five Democrats I could vote for. McCain is a Democrat. His record supports gun control. He wants to throw away the First Amendment with McCain-Feingold. As far as amnesty goes, he doesn't want to build a wall. He wants to build a bridge to Mexico. Romney's universal health care in Massachusetts is crashing, and Huckabee has tax issues in Arkansas. Hillary Clinton's carrying baggage. His name is Bill, and Barack Obama is untested in anything.
Well, we'll
vote as a write-in.
You'll vote as a write-in. For whom?
That is yet to be decided.
All right, Spencer, thanks very much. And the reference to Governor Huckabee's tax problems, from that caller's point of view, and it's been brought up by conservatives in the Republican Party that as governor of Arkansas, Governor Huckabee presided over tax increases.
Well, I'm going to put Spencer down as a leaner. Not sure yet if we can get him or not. But if you look at Governor Huckabee's record on taxes in Arkansas, it's pretty clear. He cut taxes 94 times as governor for 10 and a half years. He had the first broad-based income tax cut in Arkansas's history. He took a $200 million deficit, turned it into an $850 million surplus, and he did this in 10 and a half years without the income tax rate going up. Sales tax only went up a penny. Some of the taxes that folks like the Club for Growth and some of the folks that have taxes on are taxes that were voted on by the voters in the state of Arkansas. Either that or it was a court order mandated to fix a multi-generational education problem, which was the bulk of the share of taxes went up. But if you look at the taxes that Governor Huckabee had control over, they went down. And he's very proud of his record as governor of Arkansas. And probably the biggest barometer of a success of a governor in a state like Arkansas, especially a Republican one in which there's 87% of the Democratic the officials in Arkansas are Democratic, is he kept on getting elected and reelected. And he left Arkansas with a very high approval rating. And then just yesterday, obviously, he received over 62% of the vote in a three-way Republican primary. So, I look to the voters of Arkansas to see how they reacted to Governor Huckabee. Obviously, very positive. He is a guy that believes that less government's better than more government. So I would hope Spencer would take another look at his tax record. What he's going to find out is this guy's a tax cutter.
And there's also a question of money. Governor Huckabee, running on a shoestring, as we mentioned, did very well yesterday. Difficult to do that with little money in all of those states. How is the fundraising going, and how much money do you think the governor needs to raise to be competitive?
Well, it's an interesting question because they said when we started this race a year ago that you're going to have to raise $100 million to stay competitive in this race. I think it's interesting is the three people left in this race right now, Mitt Romney, obviously will hit that $100 million mark because he's put about probably $50 million of his own money in. John McCain's nowhere near that number, and we're nowhere near that number. When you look at what Mike Huckabee's done with very little, there's an analysis in the Washington Post that Mitt Romney, if you take his fourth quarter numbers, not including what he spent in January, he's paying about $1.2 million per delegate, which is on the way to break Phil Graham's record of $1.5 million per delegate that he got in 96. We're about, for every $1 million we spend, we pick up about 20 delegates. So we're very happy with the frugal campaign. And we believe it this. Most people don't choose their president based on how much money they have in the bank. They choose their president based on ideas and the ability to communicate those ideas about the future of the country. I don't think there's a better candidate on either side of the aisle that's a better communicator than Mike Huckabee. And he is talking about his vision for the future of the country. I think that's what's catching on. That's why we win in states like Georgia, which is a pretty big and expensive state where we spent hardly any resources on television or radio. But he was still able to win because the people in Georgia got a chance to meet him, got a chance to know him, and they ultimately voted for him.
Yesterday, in one of Governor Huckabee's wins, that was in the caucuses in West Virginia, where after a first ballot, Senator McCain's supporters threw their support to Governor Huckabee. Are the Huckabee and McCain camps in cahoots against Governor Romney?
No, I would also say don't forget Ron Paul, who was on the ballot the first time as well. They did not move to Mitt Romney either. I think this says a whole lot more about Mitt Romney's inability to get past his own base than anything else. Mike Huckabee is a lot of people's first choices, but he's also a lot of people's second choice. And I think when you see a convention-style selection process like that, there's a lot of people that know that their person may not make it, but they also have in mind, well, gosh, if my man can't make it, who am I going to be for? Again, I think there's a lot of people out there that have wanted to support Mike Huckabee for a while, but the national media has told them so long that he's not in the race that they go ahead and support somebody else. And when they figure out that he is in the race, there's a little bit of buyer's remorse. So I think what you saw in a convention process is Mike Huckabee was a close second in the first ballot. Then when they had the second ballot, you had the vast majority of people picking their second choice, which was obviously Mike Huckabee, not Mitt Romney.
Chip Saltzman, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. You have a good day.
Chip Saltzman, Governor Mike Huckabee's campaign manager, with us on the phone from Little Rock, Arkansas. We had hoped to speak with a representative of Governor Mitt Romney today. Unfortunately, they were not able to provide a spokesperson during our program today. So we'll continue to talk about what's coming up next with Ken Rudin, our political editor, and take another call. And this is on the Democratic line. Zach calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Here in Portland, there's a really big groundswell of support for Ron Paul. And I have a lot of friends here who are independents and libertarians who are supporting Ron Paul who have historically voted Democratic. I wonder if Ron Paul, because of his, you know, he always has a slice of the pie in all of these states, if he could have kind of a Nader-esque effect on the Democratic race in the long term.
Referring to Ralph Nader's Green Party campaign, which some Democrats believe may have cost Al Gore the presidency in 2000. What do you think, Ken Rudin?
Well, Zach actually ended his question by saying what effect he would have on the Democratic race. I assume he meant on the Republican race. Is that correct, Zach?
No, if he runs as an independent in the general election.
Effect on the Democratic race?
Yeah, on the general election.
I mean the Democratic race because historically, I know that Ron Paul, he ran Republican. He's running Republican to be kind of more viable as a candidate. But a lot of the friends that I'm referring to have historically thrown their support to Democrats.
Oh, I see. And in an open primary in Oregon, they would vote for Ron Paul as opposed to one of the Democrats.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we've heard from a lot of Ron Paul supporters, you know, over the past year, how all the support on the blogosphere, whether it would translate into actual votes. And ultimately, we have not seen much Ron Paul support out there, 4 or 5% in most of the primaries, certainly yesterday. What I'm most interested in is the fact is he has raised a lot of money. We talk about how little money Mike Huckabee has raised. Ron Paul, I think, has raised $20, $30 million, which is an enormous amount of money. But he doesn't seem to be spending it at all. There's no evidence of that. So the question is, what are you going to do with the money? And there's been rumors about perhaps a third or fourth party candidacy on the Libertarian Party, which is he was a Libertarian Party nominee in 1988. The thought of Ron Paul as a third party candidate in the general election, that leads to more questions than anybody was prepared to answer. And if a lot of conservatives are not happy with John McCain, for example, in the fall, Ron Paul could be that outlet for conservative frustration.
Zach, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about, results from yesterday, Super Tuesday, and looking ahead at contests this weekend, next Tuesday, and, down to the party political conventions and beyond. Our guest is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. You can read his Political Junkie column at npr.org, and you're listening to an NPR news special. And here's an email we have from Pam. I was talking to a friend this morning about the fact that I've never been undecided this far into a campaign. We decided that part of the reason is that I straddle the demographics. I'm a latte-drinking feminist of a certain age, and I can't make up my mind between Hillary and Obama. However, since I live in Portland, Oregon, I still have plenty of time to decide, and my primary vote is unlikely to matter.
Well, that may not be true. I mean, we always thought that, and I've said this over and over again, that we thought that February 5th, that Super Tuesday could very well end one or both of primary nomination battles. But the races go on, and the subsequent votes absolutely do matter.
Let's see if we can get Jeremy on the line. Jeremy calling on the Republican line from Harrisonburg in Virginia.
Yes, actually, I'm a Virginia independent, and in the Shenandoah Valley here in the western part of the state. And I'm having a hard time deciding which primary to vote in because I generally like McCain and Obama, and I really dislike Clinton and Romney. So I'm kind of trying to vote defensively to support the guys that I like. It would be great to see a matchup between Obama and McCain. It would be wonderful to feel like you're choosing between who you like better rather than who you dislike least. I'm not sure how to vote next Tuesday.
Jeremy, he embodies the independent vote since they're torn, as we look at the exit polls, Ken Rudin, between, Senator McCain and Senator Obama.
Right, and those are two candidates who have done very, very well with independents. Perhaps if John McCain certainly won New Hampshire on the back of independent voters, perhaps if he were not in the race, maybe Barack Obama would have gotten the independents to beat Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. But more and more we're hearing those are the two candidates where where independents seem to be gravitating. But if you look at the regular party professionals, the regular Democrats, the regular Republicans, they are not as enamored of Obama and McCain as the independents are.
Jeremy, good luck, and maybe you can decide cast half a vote in each party.
Sounds good.
All right, bye bye.
As
we look at, let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Loanne. Loanne with us from Irvine in California.
Hi.
I'm
Asian American, living in California, and I hear about these statistic about Latina votes, but I'll be interested in hearing more about Asian votes.
Asian votes, according to the exit polls, broke heavily for Senator Clinton yesterday in California.
Yay! I support Hillary, and I don't hear many callers call to support Hillary, so I'm calling in to cast my vote and say that, you know, Hillary, she gets criticized because she has a lot of history, which Obama doesn't. That means he doesn't have experience. And we're going through a process, what I would call a honeymoon period with Senator Obama, because he's a new face, and he certainly, you know, can speak well. But you got to think about what he has to offer and any depth in what he offering.
Loanne, thanks very much for the call. Did you vote yesterday?
Yes.
And what was it like at your polling booth? Was it crowded?
Well, I got off work early, so it was around 5. So I after I finished, some more people stopped pulling in. But when I came in, it was hardly anyone.
Hardly anyone. Okay, thanks very much, Loanne. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Ken Rudin, as we look ahead over the next, several days, not just this weekend's primaries and caucuses, but then into next week, on the Democratic side, you expect Senator Obama to do fairly well. On the Republican side, what does it look like?
Well, I suspect that it'll be the same thing. I think these are not the deep South states where Mike Huckabee has done so well, as certainly he did so well yesterday. But I think a lot has to depend on what the future of the Mitt Romney campaign is. There are rumors that he may not be long for this world, or at least a political world, that he may find that the investment he's put in has not reaped the benefits he expected. And if it's, if it's McCain versus Huckabee, that would be very interesting, because even if Maryland, Virginia, those kind of states, Louisiana, may not be considered like a logical Huckabee country if he is the conservative alternative to McCain. It would be interesting to see what happens. But we've seen so far in the campaign, they actually seem to like each other. McCain and Huckabee have not campaigned. They have not shown the antagonism that they've both shown towards Mitt Romney, with good reason. Mitt Romney ran a lot of negative ads against both McCain and Huckabee, and I think that's why some of them are angry at them.
Rush Limbaugh, not the only person today to speculate about a McCain-Huckabee ticket in the fall.
Yeah, not convinced that that would satisfy all the conservatives, because as we heard from a caller earlier, there's a lot in Huckabee's record as governor of Arkansas that conservatives say that it's not truly conservative.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Neil.
And we'd like to thank all of our guests today and all of our callers and emailers, those who got on the air and those who could not. We thank you. I'm Neil Conan. You've been listening to an NPR News special.